You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. It seems we're not alone in this country when it comes to slow broadband, shoddy customer service and mobile phone sharks. This week alone sees the UK's frustration on the rise over broadband and in particular mobile phones. For years in Australia, we've had contracts lock us into inflexible long-term payment structures to cover the cost of the so-called subsidy that phone companies allegedly, out of the kindness of their heart, offer us. 12 months or two-year contracts seem to be the norm these days. Recently, with the commissioning and switching on of the HSDPA data services in Australia, we're still well and truly entrenched in the honeymoon period of pricing. Not for us, but for the telcos. And nearly 12 months down the track from the day Sol Trujillo muttered these immortal words,
today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
That telco in particular is still charging the same amount as they did on the launch day. To give you an idea of where we are with data right now, Telstra, Australia's incumbent telco, charge $109 for 1 gigabyte of data. And at the other end of the spectrum, Three charge just $30 for that same gigabyte. Telstra offer a casual or 24-month package, and Three offers a 12-month package. In fairness though, Three is a city-centric provider where Telstra offers national coverage, although this in itself is the subject of litigation between Australia's consumer watchdog, the ACCC, and Telstra. Back to the UK though, the launch of the iPhone and talk of unlocking the device so you can use it on anyone's network has raised the question of being able to buy the handset of your choice unlocked, so you, the consumer, can have the choice of not being locked into a contract and therefore switch carriers as you like, based on the good old consumer values of price and service. After all, when was the last time you were satisfied with either from a telco? The freedom provided by unlocked phones is particularly useful for people who travel, since they can avoid roaming fees by converting their mobile into local phones in most countries by simply inserting the local SIM card. What a concept! If we, the consumer, insisted on buying an unlocked, unbranded mobile phone, maybe we'd see the return of customer service, and more importantly, quality of service. One thing's for sure, apart from making the real cost of a handset apparent, we'd all have the benefit of changing our handsets as the new technology rolls out, without the payout penalty set to steal the majority of the cost of the new handset. So as a consumer, I ask you this, has complacency and habit put us at the mercy of the telco? Maybe it's time to spend that little bit more and swing the scales back in our favour.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner checks out SCO and Linux. Coonan seeks to censor the web. Lydia Davis joins us from California to talk video search. The ACMA says we're very connected. And we reveal just how much Bill Gates earns in one day. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
Virgin Mobile sued over advertisement. Coonan seeks to censor the web. Two clicks to drop Whirlpool action. And Telstra to fight for CDMA shutdown. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Virgin Mobile Australia has been sued by a Texas family angry over the use of a photo of their teenage daughter in an advertisement without consent. The photo shows 16-year-old Allison Chang flashing a peace sign at a car wash and was taken by her youth counsellor who posted it on his Flickr page. Virgin Mobile added the words "dump your pen friend" and "free text Virgin to Virgin" to the image and used it as part of an advertising campaign both online and on billboards around Australia. The Chang family claim that Alison has been insulted, that her privacy has been invaded, and that she has been exposed to ridicule by her peers due to the use of her image in the ad. Virgin claims that the photographer chose to publish the image using the Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike license, so their use of the image is therefore entirely legal. The Creative Commons license used does allow the image to be used and modified for any purpose, including commercial use, as long as the original author is credited. Flickr allows users to share photos under a range of different licenses, including a very restrictive all rights reserve option. However, it appears that this photographer chose the more open license. The lawsuit names as defendants Virgin Mobile US, Virgin Mobile Australia, Flickr, and the Creative Commons Corporation who wrote the license. In an Internet Censorship Amendment Bill introduced into Parliament last week, Communications Minister Senator Helen Coonan proposes to expand a blacklist of internet addresses currently maintained by the Australian Communications and Media Authority to include terrorism and cybercrime sites. The amendment would give the Australian Federal Police power to instruct the ACMA to add such sites to the blacklist, which had previously only listed pornographic or offensive content. The ACMA must then notify internet service providers, who must take reasonable steps to prevent users from accessing the sites. Greens Senator Kerry Nettle has criticised the bill, citing the enormous power it puts in the hands of the Federal Police Commissioner, as well as the burden it would place on local ISPs at a time when the IT industry faces growing costs. However, commentator Chris Berg, writing for Crikey.com, points out that the ACMA blacklist is currently only used in filtering software and by ISPs offering family-friendly internet services and is not mandatory. He claims that the danger is that at some point in the future, the blocks would be made compulsory and that this legislation is another step down a slippery slope towards censorship. The lawsuit against the popular broadband forum Whirlpool is expected to be dropped this week, according to advice given to Whirlpool by the lawyers for software company 2Clix. As we reported last week, the software company was suing the forum's owner, Simon Wright, over comments made by users unhappy with the 2Clix product. Their demands included the removal of two threads from the forum and $150,000 per month in damages. The action provoked outrage across the Australian internet community, being seen as an attack on online freedom. Whirlpool founder Simon Wright says he intends to offer refunds to those who donated money to support the site's defence once the case has been formally withdrawn and costs are known. The donations link on the site has been disabled. Although online civil liberties organisations such as Electronic Frontiers Australia have welcomed the backdown by 2Clix, others have pointed out that the situation leaves the legal position of such sites uncertain since the case was not decided by the court. In a brochure titled Say Goodbye to CDMA, Say Hello to Next G Wireless Broadband, Telstra has strongly criticised the federal government's moves to force the company to keep the CDMA mobile phone network running until it is satisfied about the coverage of the replacement Next G network. Communications Minister Senator Helen Coonan last week delegated responsibility for imposing the licence condition to Attorney General Philip Ruddock, who took just 24 hours to do so. In their new brochure, Telstra argues that the licence condition is another example of the government showing disregard for sound, pro-consumer and pro-investment public policy, and promising to explore legal options to reduce these new government-imposed burdens on consumers and Telstra shareholders. Telstra also reaffirmed its commitment that NextG will provide the same or better guaranteed coverage by the scheduled CDMA closure date of the 28th of January 2008. Tech Talk Radio's panellist and mobile communications expert Mark Diggins has warned that delaying the closure of the CDMA network may have a serious impact on the quality of the new NextG network, because infrastructure scheduled to be transferred to the new network to support its growing user base would remain tied up in the older system. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
eBay. Anyone had problems with eBay?
The seller is dodgy. You are protected. If we manage to get any money off him, we'll give it back to you.
eBay bought PayPal. Maybe they could buy Australia Post next.
I'd always be very dubious, especially from countries which aren't in Australia.
How many countries are in Australia?
Apart from Tasmania and Queensland.
I haven't been down that track.
I have an apology to make to Senator Coonan and her office.
Oh, this wow. You can't use parachutes on the moon because there's no atmosphere.
The bizarre ACCC federal government Telstra love triangle that Dr. Ron is so passionate about.
It's a shame that you can't set up a bonfire and burn a website in the same way that you can burn a book, isn't it, Dr. Ron?
We're a bitter and twisted and cynical bunch in here at times, aren't we?
Speak for yourself.
There'll be some people who aren't sad to see the end of ATRAC, though.
Written, spoken and authorised by Dr. Ron for the federal... Yep, that's enough of the Telstra rhetoric tonight, I think.
No, rhetoric.
Rhetoric?
That's a good word. That's a very good word.
The rhetoric. Yeah, you heard it first on Tech Talk Radio.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, we're nearly getting close to the 150th show of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across from me on the panel this evening, we have a cast of thousands in the room. In fact, everybody's here this evening. Dr. Ron is here. Good evening, Dr. Ron.
Yes, present and accounted for. How are you this week, Andrew?
Very well. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Mark Diggins is here. He's recovered 100% from the flu, I believe.
99% at least.
99%. Yep. Well, which percent did you leave behind? The runny nose bit or the headachey bit? Or
the tiredness. I'm still tired at the end of the day, you know. It's energy.
Yeah, I think you're going to have that for a while. I think that's just a telltale sign of the flu these days. Yeah.
You can keep that just quietly.
Yep.
And joining us as a guest commentator this evening, who's going to tell us all about Mac, is Justin Dunlop. Hello, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good to be back.
It's lovely to have you back. We've needed a guru because apparently there's a lot of flack in the forums and someone said you need someone to come and talk. So here we are.
Sort them out, don't you worry.
It'll be terrific. Alrighty. Well, what an interesting week it's been this week. So far, so good. We've, never a dull moment in the world of technology, and this week is no surprise. But before we get down and dirty in today's news, Dr. Ron, letters. You've got some, I believe.
I have lots of good feedback and lots of hellos from our forum contributors. If you're not already a user of the forum, go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au, register there, and you can participate in discussion about all things related to the program. Hello to some people that have signed up in the last few weeks. Natasha, with the cryptic username NJ29AU. Natasha says, hi, everyone. I recently discovered the Tech Talk Radio podcast and have listened to the most recent shows.
Yes, I remember seeing this email come in from Natasha.
Yes, I'll be listening to the older ones when I get time. I think
don't bother.
No, I wouldn't bother, Natasha. No, it just gets better and better. It gets worse and worse if you go backwards. I look forward to my TTR dosage every week. It is a bit like medication, isn't it? I start to get withdrawal.
Have you actually listened to the show? Well, you do because you don't come sometimes.
Sometimes.
And as a result, you do probably listen to the show.
Yeah. Hope to chat to you all around the forum. Natasha from Perth, Western Australia. Thanks very much, Natasha. Good to have you on board. Peter Hatley from the One Stop VoIP Shop asks, are Telstra still learning about the web? G'day, guys.
I thought
you might want to have a laugh. Check out the page title on this next page. He's given us a link to a telstra.com.au NextG website, which is rather long and convoluted. We'll publish it on the Tech Talk Radio webpage in the forum. But the title, you know how you have a title tags in HTML?
Yes.
Andrew and Mark and JD at the top of the webpage.
It's only 20 minutes in, we're talking techie already. Impressive.
It is impressive. In the top of the web browser, you have a title description. The title description on this page says, add page title here, followed by dash Telstra. We're still there when I checked it. So thanks, Peter. Peter also says, I'd love to see some pressure on all ISP plans under, say, 3 gigabytes to exempt WindowsUpdate.com and MicrosoftUpdate.com from download quotas.
That's probably a very good idea, Peter.
That would suit me just fine. At 400 megabytes... it's not enough, you know.
XP2 was 270 megabytes, he says. Vista SP1 is rumoured to be about 1 gigabyte.
Oh, yeah, I've got 400 megabytes, just the updates, and when I've got a laptop that works off the same connection, I go over now every month at 400 megabytes. It's not enough, you know, and I don't do much YouTube or
videos. Can I just say one thing?
Anything.
And I think we've said this in the course of the program, over the course of time. There should be, the minimum plan should be 3 gig, easy.
None of this 200 megabyte rubbish that some of these telcos throw at you and measure uploads. Yeah, how can you do? You can't even do email on that. Goodness me.
I can do email on it, and that's all, you know, really. Look, at the end of the year, we're coming up to the end of the contract. Going to look at what I'm going to do about it then.
So. Are you a victim of contract?
Oh, aren't we all?
No, I'm not. No, I just had a rant about that on the opening of the show. I said, everyone, just break free of your contracts. Go out there and buy handsets which are not... Free. Well, it's yeah, exactly right. You can't buy a handset which is not on a contract. Having said that, I did sign up with a company. I'll give them a plug. AANet. You can actually sign up. You pay an extra $50 or something like that when you sign up and no contract.
Mm-hmm.
You're free. And it's a bit like mobile phones. If you pay more for your handset, you can actually... get the phone without a contract and go on a date on a thing. So you can actually do it. And as a consumer, if you do that, I'm of the opinion that potentially the only thing that's going to differentiate some companies is customer service and products and support, of which we are sadly lacking at the moment. I had another really frustrating experience with a manufacturer, Hewlett Packard, actually. Have you ever rung Hewlett Packard? There's one guy. His name's Andrew. He's in India, and I've spoken to him twice this week, ringing up about my compact Fazario.
Oh, hello, Andrew, if you're listening in Mumbai. It was about printers and laser jets and things like that you had problems with.
That's pretty impressive. You've rung one organisation and got the same guy over there twice in a row.
Was it not you again?
And did he remember you?
Yes, he did.
Did he really? So it wasn't just someone who sounded like Andrew saying he was Andrew again.
No. I spoke to you last night. He said, yeah, how'd you go? He did give me some interesting advice, which I would strongly disagree with because I was having problems.
Technical advice?
Yes. Mm. I was having problems with this laptop here, which is only 6 months old. And the wireless card has decided to cease to function. So I can't connect wirelessly. I've got to use a blue cable or use the HSDPA.
That'd be pretty frustrating, wouldn't it?
Very frustrating.
You use it all the time, don't you?
Anyway, I do. It's very anyway. To cut a long story short, a few tests. No, sorry, no. I can see the card there, but I can't connect to it. Then he said the bad word, the F word. He said you'll have to format the drive.
Yes.
I've gone. No,
sure, I thought you were going to say something else.
I will not be. Formatting the drive, young Andrew. I said, there's enough data on here which will take me hours and hours and hours to resurrect if I have to rebuild it for the sake of some techo just taking 10 minutes and swapping a card in the back of the machine.
It's the opposite of a reboot party, isn't it? It's like a wake.
Yes, it is. Anyway.
That's really overkill. It's an incredible step to take just because a PC card has stopped working to actually reformat.
Oh, if all else fails, reformat your machine.
Yeah, but you'd think that there'd be a lot of
other... And it's a laptop. It's not like a desktop. It's a laptop, you know.
There'd have to be other things that you could try first, though, surely.
Oh. Well, yes.
That'd be an absolute last resort.
10 minutes for a techo to unslot the wireless card and slot a new one in and boot it up and go, there you go, it works.
Mm.
Rather than having to format the drive. Because, like, from experience, you know damn well it's not going to be the...
Yeah, you can't convince that it's a hardware problem.
What did you do to make it stop working? Did you install some new software?
Well, I came up here and plugged it in last Monday night and it didn't work after that.
Oh.
It's just being in the presence of you guys. Hey, listen, let's talk about things Coonan in particular. Did you know that the Right Honourable Senator Helen Coonan is trying to censor the web again? The Federal Police Commissioner will have the power to block and ban websites believed to be crime or terrorism related. Graham reported about this on the news.
Mm.
And then they're going to put it back on the ISPs to block them. Hello. Haven't we just had this debate in recent times in the mainstream media and other places? And
yes.
Who is advising our politicians at the moment?
I hate this. I mean, you know, we talked about the card for everyone to use, this data card where they could check all your data. And we go, well, yes, they can do all these things that they don't say they can do now. And we know that they can do them behind the scenes and not tell us about them. But if you're not doing anything wrong, it's not a problem. Well, this is the same. They're just saying they're going to do this and this and this and only block these sites. But they can block all this other stuff as well. And you don't have any control over it.
I just reckon they're piggybacking on the anti... What do you call it? The software...
Terrorism.
The stuff that the kid who's sitting in his bedroom on the computer... That
NetAlert.
NetAlert. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. They're piggybacking on that. They're obviously collecting some form of blacklist... You know, where they're blocking ISPs from NetAlert, and they've gone, hang on a minute, we can block these directly at the ISP, and let's call it censorship.
But for internet service providers to implement a system where they're filtering or running filters at their level of content, internet content.
Man, we're slow enough as it is. We don't need that.
It's just going to add to congestion. It's going to slow down all of our services, whether we're actually having stuff filtered or not. we're going to get slowed down. And we're going to, as consumers, we're going to be paying the price for it. We're going to be paying increased fees because the ISPs have to implement new solutions and new systems.
It doesn't
systems.
Have to actually be blocking stuff to slow it down because it has to check everything.
It has to check everything. That's right, Mark.
And this bill was stealthily, and I mean use the word stealthily, tabled in the Senate at 9:58 last Friday before anyone could even talk about it. So that's what you're like. Come on, let's bring on the election. Let's
that was
sort...
the last day of Parliament, was it?
Yeah. I think well, it was. That was where Peter Costello had his Freudian slip about saying just that. Yes. This Freudian, is the last day of...
The Freudian slip's where you say one thing and mean another. No, hang on, that's not right. What I say exactly the same thing, Andrew. Bring it on. Bring on the election because we need to get all this nonsense out of the way. We need all this stuff over and done with. Get it all out of this system. We don't want any more of these nonsense proposals about filtering at ISP levels and that sort of junk.
Oh, yeah. SCO, Linux. Do you know what SCO is? SCO is a company.
The Santa Cruz Operation.
That's it. Justin, you can talk. You don't have to do sign language. You can partake here. Oh, you can be very loud.
Excellent.
So, yeah, SCO and Linux. Yes. Do you know? What do you know about them?
I've played with SCO Linux on a, dare I say, Intel machine.
Really?
Mm.
Any good?
Oh, like any Linux, it's good.
It's been around for years, SCO Unix. Very highly respected in the industry.
Mm, SCO aren't, though. Have you heard?
What's happened?
Oh, I'll let Adam tell you. Here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
If you believe in karma, then the fate of a company called SCO will come as a little surprise to you. Some people might know SCO by its original name, Caldera. Founded in 1994, Caldera produced its own version of Linux, and in 2002, it joined forces with SUSE Linux, Turbo Linux, and Connectiva to form United Linux in an attempt to standardize Linux distributions. Caldera was considered one of the good guys, taking up arms in the open source fight against the might of Microsoft. A few years earlier in 2000, Caldera had acquired several key Unix applications from Novell. Unix is one of the early pre-Windows operating systems. It's similar to Linux, but unlike Linux, Unix is not open source. People own the rights to Unix, and Caldera bought some of those rights in 2000, or so it thought. Linux prospects were looking good in 2002 when Caldera and the others joined forces to form United Linux. But later that year, Caldera went through some changes. There was a change in management, and the company was renamed the SCO Group. Around about this time, someone at SCO looked closely at the Unix code the company had acquired from Novell several years earlier and decided that the core code of Linux had actually borrowed some of that Unix code. Of course, Caldera was one of the good guys supporting the Linux cause, so it would be happy to let the Unix community use such code, right? Not once Caldera had transformed into SCO. SCO went on the warpath, insisting that all versions of Linux infringed on its copyright and demanding that all Linux users pay SCO a license fee. You can imagine how well that went down with the open source community. SCO's heavy-handedness triggered off the mother of all legal battles. SCO started suing giant companies such as Daimler Chrysler for using Linux. It then went on to attack IBM. When Novell claimed that it hadn't actually sold those particular rights to SCO, SCO sued Novell for slander and also for using the Unix code SCO now believed it owned. While most Linux-using companies refused to hand over any money to SCO, it did have a chilling effect on Linux adoption and open source in general, with SCO generating enough fear, uncertainty and doubt to scare people away. SCO became one of the most hated companies in the world. The interesting thing is that one of the first companies to pay SCO a licensing fee was Microsoft, a company that easily had the legal muscle to ignore threats from puny SCO. Microsoft handed over $16 million for a license and helped SCO arrange another $50 million for an investment fund to fight its legal war against Linux users. It's no surprise, considering Microsoft had the most to gain from Linux's downfall. The legal wrangling dragged on for years, with SCO refusing to reveal exactly which lines of code it claimed Linux had stolen from Unix. Had it done so, it would have taken the open source community a very short period of time to rewrite that code. After 5 years of SCO's scare campaign, in August a judge threw out SCO's case against Novell and the whole thing collapsed. SCO has now filed for bankruptcy protection. The exquisite irony is that SCO now owes Novell money because SCO charged companies like Microsoft a licensing fee for code that actually belonged to Novell, rights, and now the money that they made on that licensing fee has to go to Novell. The bill could be as high as $30 million, which was the last straw that forced SCO to file for bankruptcy protection. Meanwhile, Microsoft walks away scot-free, having let someone else do its dirty work and pay the price. Still, perhaps Karma has a few tricks left up its sleeve yet.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Coming soon to Tech Talk Radio, we catch up with Australia's Hugh Williams. A graduate of RMIT, Hugh is the Principal Development Manager of Microsoft's Live Search. And Hugh answers some of the tough and tricky questions from some of the image search users.
You know this whole Chris Crocker, Britney Spears YouTube video thing that's been going around?
Yeah.
And Seth Green has also done his own, you know, leave Chris Crocker alone. And I just think, how would you do, like, the, you know, the search technology behind finding that video? But I just think that's a perfect example of what people might be looking for at the moment.
Absolutely. Anything celebrity?
Yeah.
Very, very popular.
So join us here on Tech Talk Radio when we find out everything you want to know about search with Hugh Williams, Principal Developer of Microsoft Live, an Australian now living and working in Redmond in the United States for Microsoft.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, you can tune into the podcast if you're running a little bit behind the eight ball at certain times. And you only get the hour show, have a listen to the podcast. Anyway, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is on the panel this evening. Mark Diggins is here. And our guest this evening is Justin Dunlop. We're going to talk about Macintosh and all things along those lines. Now, a bit of a tease there before we went to the break. One thing I want to ask about, let's start the ball off rolling because with the one from left center, iTouch, which is the new device. It's the iPhone without the phone. It's the Maxwell Smart equivalent of, something you want to have that you can't use in this country.
This is the iPod, which looks like an iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they any good? Are they available here yet, Justin?
They are available here. There's a few people, I think, that have started playing with them already. A few complaints about the screen quality, apparently. Come in two models, an 8GB and a 16GB. And I guess that sort of goes to some of the rumours about the next of the iPhones, because at the moment the iPhones are an 8GB device,
mm-hmm.
and there was some leaked information from T-Mobile in Germany about a 16GB iPhone, and the fact that the iTouch is already out with 16GB, it sort of confirms the rumour that that's what they're moving towards.
It's the same container really, isn't it? Why wouldn't it fit?
That's exactly right. So it's a 3.5-inch touch screen, and I guess the breakthrough here, which you've probably covered already, is it's multi-touch, so you can use more than one finger, so you can stretch images on it, and you can reduce images on it, and I'm pretending with my fingers in front of
the microphone. It's good for radio.
It's excellent, isn't it? Instead of just putting one finger and moving around like a mouse, you can actually use two fingers and spread them apart, and that'll make an image wider, or move your two fingers together and it'll make an image smaller.
It's worth going to have a look at the Apple keynotes by Mr. Jobs on the Apple.com site. He does demonstrate them quite well. He's got that down to a fine art. If you want to see a man in blue jeans, white runners and a black t-shirt demonstrate things, good spot.
Okay.
So that's the news with the hardware. Now, I believe your listeners had some questions about software. So maybe we should have a bit of a chat about iLife 08, which is...
Well, this is all the new. This has just come out, hasn't it?
It has, even though it's only 07.
One of the new features I like in it is being able to organise your photos better into events, I think he calls it, doesn't it?
Yep, that's right. It will automatically order your photos in events based on date and sort of similarity. There's a couple of products in this bundle, and it's really the entry bundle for the home user. So there's iPhoto, which is what you're talking about, manages your photos. GarageBand, if you're a sort of backyard muso, want to break into that sort of area and use your computer to generate music.
Yeah, create podcasts and stuff. People use
GarageBand.
You can
do that too. Yep. Absolutely, although the audio quality on GarageBand for podcasts is pretty poor.
Oh, okay.
From some of the other programs that I've been involved with. iMovie got updated. They've redesigned the interface and so forth, and that's pretty contentious. Two things about it. Firstly, it doesn't work if you haven't got a brand new computer. So if you've got a G4 like me, then you're left out in the cold. You have to use iMovie 06. But because of the changed interface, people are saying, oh, it's a lot harder to use. And the reverse camp that think it's really good say, well, that's just because you're so used to the old product. So the jury's out a little bit about the movie bit. iDVD, which allows you to generate a DVD from the iMovies that you've made. And then iWeb, which allows you to publish all of this stuff online. And of course, you can publish it where you like, but Apple would prefer you to buy a .Mac account for $139 a year and upload it all to their system. And of course,
sure
it made it
would.
Easy to do that, but you know, it's money in the pocket, isn't it? Mm. So getting back to iPhoto, I use iPhoto a lot. I maintain an online gallery for my children's photos so that rallies overseas and interstate can see them.
Do you publish online?
I do. But it's not publicly available. You need a password and so forth to get into it. But yes, I publish all our family photos online. And I use iPhoto to manage all of that. I export to it's an open source program called Gallery, which some of you may know, but uses the PHP type language. And it requires a SQL database. We can talk about those things perhaps later. But I've got a plugin for iPhoto that allows me to select photos and export it directly to my online package. Works quite well. Now, you're asking about the automatic organisation in iPhoto now. With these events, as you load photos in, iPhoto tries to work out things that happened on the same day, and if there's any indication in the file name about the commonality, it'll lump them together and say, this is all about a birthday, or this is all about going to work, or this is all about some other function.
Yep.
So when you go into the event manager, it actually orders all of your photos and groups them into events without you having to do anything to it, which I found kind of useful. Although at the end of the day, I like to pick and choose, so I use a general library for that sort of thing. iPhoto, though, I really quite like it. I don't use it to nearly the fullest extent, but I still think it's a great product. Working up from that, so that's iLife 08, and it manages your media from a home user's point of view. There's iWork, which perhaps you were talking about as well, which is to provide an entry-level sort of Microsoft Office-type product.
So we're comparing the Apple offering with what Microsoft
has in Office. Is there an Outlook equivalent now, is there?
Well, Apple have always had Mail built into their operating system. So in terms of Outlook, there's always been Mail and there's always been Calendar.
Yeah, I mean more for a calendar-ish sort of interactive thing where people send you meeting notifications and you click accept or go away or suggest
well,
a new one.
That's already built into OS X, not all that compatible with Outlook. But that's part of the operating system. In iWork, which is like the productive package, they've got Pages, which is a word processor. They've got Numbers, which is a spreadsheet, which is pretty new, and Keynote, which is a presentation program.
I love Keynote. Keynote is the equivalent of PowerPoint, and it absolutely does nasty things to PowerPoint. If you actually sit down and had a look at Keynote, it's sensational.
Yeah, I haven't used any of these in any great way other than to open them, have a bit of a play and see what they do. But most of them, I'll take your comments about Keynote. I haven't used it as much as you have. But certainly with Pages and Numbers, if you want an entry-level product and you're getting used to word processing, you want something to do it at home, then it's a good product. I'm not sure that I'd use Numbers over Excel just yet, though. So there's a lot of products around for the diehard Macs. And obviously now with the new Intel version of the iMac and Mac Pro, if you want to use a Microsoft product, well, you can boot up Windows if you like and use the Windows suite as well.
Providing you've got Bootcamp loaded up or something like that, I guess.
Bootcamp or Parallels or one of the other emulator products, yes.
Yeah. Look, I think there's a lot of interesting new products that have come out there. And I think Apple is certainly taking heed of what their market is saying. How do they go with interactivity at the moment between applications? Like if you make something in Final Cut, can you export that into, say, iMovie to take your movie file and put onto DVD? Or is it all just... Do you find that they all talk with each other?
They certainly do. They probably don't go in that direction because you've gone from the professional suite backwards, and I don't know many people who go in that direction. But certainly if you use iPhoto to generate your photos, which we do, and you use iMovie to capture your video off your video camera, you can bring and use GarageBand, for example, to make your own soundtrack. You can bring them all together to publish into iDVD. So, yes, they certainly integrate very well. I guess that's really where Apple have excelled with this
Exactly
product.
Right. And from a domestic and home user point of view, you've got the competition, which is really Microsoft and those sort of suites. But even still, they don't talk seamlessly like what the Mac products seem to do, especially with their drag and drop and bring from one application to another. They do it very well.
That's right. And I guess one of the criticisms of the new iMovie 08 is that there's no timeline involved. It's more about dropping scenes and dropping photos and dropping sound files.
Well, it's what you're used to, though, isn't it?
Which I think for the basic user is what they need.
But as you were saying before, you know, because people aren't used to this form of timeline, or you know, I come from a video editing background, I thrive on a timeline. But if I didn't have a timeline, there you go, well, how do you trim? How do you do this? But if you're not used to that, if they're trying to bring you into, and this might be the case for this level of video editing, you just want to drag your image you've brought in off your DV camera and drop it in here, and you want to drag a couple of stills from over there and put them up as, you know, title slides. How easy is that? That was one of the good things about their DVD authoring platform. It was very, very easy. And I guess we all hate instruction manuals, don't we? So intuitiveness in software is really important, especially for a lot of users who just don't have that, you know, techie gene in their body.
That's
right. I'm sure you know what I mean.
So in iMovie, it actually presents you with a list of everything in your library. So all of the photos, all the events, as we were talking about a moment ago, all of the video clips that you have available and some of the sound files you've got available in iTunes, for example, and you can just drag them from your iTunes area across into the movie. You can move them around to be at the beginning or the end. The new version of iMovie, I don't think, is so sophisticated about being able to segment parts of the audio to match the video. But again, for an entry-level user, that's probably a much better project to have than something with more sophisticated editing processes.
No, it's very good, Justin. If we look at the options that like Microsoft Windows has, there's nothing, I guess, that is integrated that tightly. Like we've got the Office productivity suite, and sure, we can open a Word document and we can paste an Excel spreadsheet segment into it, or we can, you know, do something like that. We can move around between applications, but if we want to do something like serious graphics editing, we're not going to use Paint. You know, we're going to be loading up a software application that's written by a third party, nothing to do with Microsoft.
Photoshop.
That's right. Or if we're going to be doing some video editing, we're going to be using something completely different. We're not going to be running up, you know, Windows Media Player to do stuff. So it's good. That's something that Apple's got in their favour, certainly.
You know, one of the good things?
The tight integration with these packages.
They're integrating games into these new iPod devices too at the moment. I think there's one of them comes out with three video games built in as standard. So when you get bored on the train, tram, bus, wherever, plane, wherever you might
you
have to
be. You start playing games as well.
You can get into games. I think that's good. That's listening to their users, isn't it? You're like, drive yourself absolutely batty after a while playing games on your little iPod. That would be a very small device, but that's where it's all going.
Which is fantastic. The interesting thing is that if you bought the games for your last generation iPod, you have to buy them again for your new generation iPod.
Oh, now that's going to be ruffle feathers, I would have thought.
Is it a new version? Like, is it not compatible and that's why you have to do it, or is it just a money-making exercise?
I don't know the difference, to be honest. It's a bit like iMovie 08 supposedly doesn't work on my G4 Cube that I use at home, which is an older Macintosh. But in fact, if you know what you're doing, you can hack it so that it will load, and I've done that. It runs very, very slowly, but it does run.
Okay.
So I don't know whether it's fact or fiction, whether it's just an enforced you must pay now because it's a different model, or whether there's a technology reason behind it. I'm not sure.
Can I digress for a little bit? Where are we with operating systems at the moment with Mac?
Well, that's the interesting thing. We've gone to OS 10, of course, at the moment, and so you can get OS 10.4.10, which is what I'm currently running, and I believe there's a 0.11 update around the corner. The new version Leopard's due out sometime soon.
They've been talking about Leopard for considerably long amount of time.
Yeah, sometime soon. So before the end of the year, it's probably going to be in the Christmas stocking. So the next version is coming soon. It will probably be more greatly optimized. So each of the OS 10 versions as they've come out have gone faster and faster. Even on my old machines, the new version, if you can load it, runs a lot faster than the earlier versions, which is great to see. Usually it's the other way around with operating systems. With Leopard, we're probably going to lose a few Macs. A few of mine probably won't run Leopard out of the box, which is a bit sad, but that'll happen eventually. But it comes with some new features.
It's called progress, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. But for a retro user like myself, that's a bit disappointing. I'd like to see my Mac Classic working forever, but it's never going to. So there's some new technologies coming with it, which have been well released now at previous Mac press release launches and so forth. So there's sort of a built-in backup with the new version. There's a search facility that's going to be greatly enhanced, but we're yet to actually see it in the flesh.
Those point upgrades, JD, are they free of charge to registered users?
They are. The point upgrades are free of charge. The security updates are free of charge.
Yep, so you just pay for the major version releases.
Correct.
You usually do. Yep.
Correct.
We had an interesting question a couple of weeks back from a listener about with the proliferation of the iPhone, which is obviously now a target for people to hack into for either, you know, connecting to another network or even just, you know, getting in through Safari. Obviously, like the way into an operating system is generally through its weakest point, which is normally a web browser. Are there any, talk to me about like antiviral or anti-hacking options that are available for these devices? Because like Safari is now available in beta format for Windows.
Mm.
And Steve promises a whole heap of productivity improvements, faster, better, and all that sort of stuff. I've tried loading it up on mine. I haven't had success yet. But obviously, the web browser is really the key to getting into an operating system if someone wants to load bogus software, and even if they trick you into going there. Are there any forms of, like, what software, what preventative measures are out there at the moment that you've seen to stop this sort of thing?
The operating system, like any other modern operating system, OS X comes with its own firewall intact, and server's got an even greater version of the firewall. I run both products at home. You can buy antivirus software, you can buy, you know, spyware cleaners and so forth. They're all available for the
Mac. Are you seeing an increase in, or is anyone else seeing an increase in this sort of activity?
I've got to say that I haven't. I've never, well, touch wood, wear some wood, I've never had a virus or Trojan horse or anything on any of my Mac computers, even pre-OS X. So I've been fairly lucky, I suspect, more than good planning in my case.
I think there's a bit of nous that goes with it too, because you just, like from our side of the fence, the technical side of the fence, you wouldn't run anything if you didn't know where it came from. Go, hang on a minute, where'd this come from? No, I'm not running that. It's like there was a virus doing the rounds today, which I saw a Microsoft security alert that came in, and one of the guys at work said, oh, is this for real? I said, no, don't click it, type sort of thing. You know that it's not ridgy-ditch. But for those people, and I guess not having a go at people that use Macs, but normally they've never had to worry about this sort of stuff. Mm. So is this false sense of security starting to creep in this environment?
Look, certainly in my particular case, yes, there is. when I was running the old OS 9 operating system and earlier versions based on the same core or the same basic language, I never used virus software because there were so few viruses around for the Mac, so I never bothered. And I am fairly sensible about what I open and what I use and so forth when I download applications. With Safari built into OS X and the widgets, which is like a second screen that you can call up with little micro applications that check weather and check webcasts. And
we're seeing that in Vista too, so I think
they've been around for
Microsoft stolen it, or the old dashboard. Remember dashboard on the early Macs?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So with Safari, you can actually download widgets that install themselves. And I think that's a bit of a risk because they're little applications that can run in the background, and a little application can do anything.
You don't know who it's been written by, and correct. You don't know what it's going to do in the background.
Yeah, and so if you're not smart and you set up Safari to automatically install these things and not ask you about it, well, I think you're asking for trouble. So it's like anything, doesn't matter what operating system you're using, it's how you perform and how you behave in it, I think, that makes the difference between a secure and insecure area.
iTunes, let's talk about that for a bit, because there's this great new range of iPods out at the moment. Also, there's this phone thingy that everyone keeps talking about as well.
This is the ringtone thing.
This is right. Yeah, this is the ringtone thing. Yep. Last week, Steve Jobs in his keynote was sort of demonstrating how well you can now make a ringtone for your phone and stuff like that. I haven't seen it being activated in Australia yet. Is it just a US only sort of thing that you know of, Justin?
I'm not sure. I believe it was really launched to be part of the iPhone, so you could get ringtones on your iPhone more than anything.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, you could actually download your favourite song, and providing there was a little bell icon there, you could say, yeah, I want to make a ringtone from my latest hit song, and you could choose up to 30 seconds and loop it and bung it across on your phone so that when your favourite person called you,
yeah, if you choose your 30 seconds and you pay an extra dollar for the music you've already bought,
So we're not seeing that in Australia yet. I haven't seen it I've been looking for it for no other reason than curiosity.
Not having an iPhone, I haven't looked for it either, but then
the bells haven't appeared, that's for sure.
I certainly sample my own music for ringtones already, so...
goodness. So, let's get the crystal ball out. What's happening? What have we got to look forward to from a Macintosh point of view? We've touched briefly on the new OS for Christmas in the stocking, potentially, maybe?
Yeah, the new OS maybe for Christmas. Well, it's meant to be this year. Certainly meant to be this year. And it's been seeded again just at the moment to developers, so no doubt that'll happen. As I mentioned earlier, there's some rumours about a sub-notebook coming out. So to be smaller than the notebook and with a touch-sensitive overlay, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? I think so. So the iMacs have just been updated. So I guess the next thing is to look for the new laptops. And there are some rumours about an ultra-thin PowerBook and or not PowerBooks anymore, MacBook and MacBook Pro, probably matching the aluminium case of the iMac. So they're the things on the horizon. And there may well be some other technologies. There's some rumours about the Apple TV getting an update.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Because Apple TV has a lot of potential, but I just don't think it's quite there yet.
Have you got one?
No, I haven't. No. Actually, you might remember the last time I said I wouldn't bother because I couldn't see it being any better than what I've got. I use an iHome, which is a very early product made by Elgato. What I have found, though, is that it's starting to age a bit, the product that I've got. So, you know, I bought it for $50 online.
Got your money's worth?
I did, absolutely. Yeah. It's worth $50.
That's the key to it, isn't it? As long as you've got your money's worth, it doesn't matter. It can be superseded.
So the Apple TV got updated since we spoke last. So its hard drive now can go up to 160 gigabytes. And if you hack it, you can make an even bigger one if you want. But that's for synchronization. It's not for storage of particular media. They've found backdoors into the machine so you can load extra codecs, which is really what I was missing out on. I wanted to use the codecs that I'm currently using, DivX and so forth.
Well, that's good because that was always its downfall, really, wasn't it? Because you couldn't... And even connectivity between a Mac or to non-Mac devices was also a bit of an issue there for a time.
Yeah, that's right. You needed a Mac basically at the other end to be providing the content off iTunes.
Yeah, I was about to say you needed the content indexed in an iTunes library on the remote machine, didn't you?
And of course, on an Apple would make it a lot easier. I presume it works with PCs. I've not actually read about that, but I assume it works with PCs as well. So there's some rumours about an updated Apple TV, so I'll be watching those.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens because there's a lot of other good sort of like other manufacturers are bringing out all sorts of whiz-bang things these days to compete with the same. So they're like Beyond Wiz and all those guys have got their own gadgets and things out there as now as well. So it's going to become a fairly competitive market. And if you're a Mac guru, well then, yeah, you've got lots to choose from, I guess.
Lots to play with. And one of the things that that it's actually missing is a web browser. Given it's got internet connectivity and the whole idea is you download movies off iTunes to watch on your Apple TV, it didn't actually have a web browser in it. So you couldn't actually go and surf the net on your TV, which in fact my old device, my $50 one, does. So
which you think would make a lot of sense because you've got network connectivity there. Why not?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it was to keep the system closed. And it's a bit like the iPhone. Really, the iPhone and the Apple TV are paralleling themselves a little bit. The business market is all around who's going to sell you the network service or the download service.
The next thing is going to be electronic program guides, which we've touched on here on this show from time to time. The ability to actually say, I want to record Doctor Who or Star Trek or whatever, and not have to worry about the time when the networks move them all around the place.
So. And you probably won't get that on the Apple TV because the Apple product range is based around buying everything off iTunes. So you buy the product for, you know, $500, but then you buy for the continual download. So it's unlikely you'll see from Apple a solution for free-to-air TV or
even supports cable TV. a third-party episode guide.
So it sounds like the AV department in your shelf in the home entertainment system is just going to grow a little bit more. You'll have all sorts of gadgets sitting there fairly shortly, hopefully connected wirelessly, which would be just terrific. But we'll have to wait and see. Justin, it's been absolutely fantastic catching up with all the Mac stuff that's out there. Hopefully we've put the right answers into a lot of people's minds this time around, and the forum will settle down a bit, Dr. Ron.
Oh, that's good.
My work here is done. Thank you very much.
Your work is, we will have you back.
Your work is never done. We'll have you back very soon,
We'll
Justin.
Have to have you back for the Christmas special so everyone knows what to buy.
Definitely.
Okay. So that'll be terrific. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. That was Justin Dunlop. We've been talking Macintosh. The panel's in this evening, and when we return, we're going to find out the website, gadget, and odd spot of the week.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Coming soon to Tech Talk Radio, we catch up with Australia's Hugh Williams. A graduate of RMIT, Hugh is the Principal Development Manager of Microsoft's Live Search. And Hugh answers some of the tough and tricky questions from some of the image search users.
You know this whole Chris Crocker, Britney Spears YouTube video thing that's been going around?
Yeah.
And Seth Green has also done his own, you know, leave Chris Crocker alone. And I just think, how would you do, like... The search technology behind finding that video, but I just think that's a perfect example of what people might be looking for at the moment.
Absolutely. Anything celebrity?
Yeah.
Very, very popular.
So join us here on Tech Talk Radio when we find out everything you want to know about search with Hugh Williams, Principal Developer of Microsoft Live, an Australian now living and working in Redmond in the United States for Microsoft.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Oh, Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own.
Now, I understand that this is radio, but bear with me here, everybody. I was given one of these gadgets as a Father's Day present this year, and I've gone into mood lighting mode. The Arnott's LED Moonlight Pen. I've just lit up the studio with my own LED Moonlight Pen.
It's a pen with an LED, bright LED thing in the bottom of it near the tip of the pen.
So when you're writing in the dark, you can see what you're writing. How good is that?
Well, that's a sexy little gadget, isn't it? We'll have to put a picture up on the website.
Yeah, definitely we will. It's a
very handy for people who work in the dark.
That doesn't work that well.
Oh, what do you mean it doesn't work that well? It's brilliant.
It's driving me nuts looking at that bright light.
It's revolutionary. No, Mark, get on board. You can look, it says here in the description, it's a biro, but it has a light in the tip, so you can read what you write, even in movie theatres, back alleyways, and even inside a patient's abdomen.
Whoa.
It is perfect for creative
types. When you're signing the abdomen.
Who wrote the sales pitch on this device?
I don't know. Not me. It's perfect for creative types who need to carry a notebook around with them wherever they go, and can also act as a regular mini flashlight when you're too intoxicated to find the lock on your car door. Oh, that's not very PC,
is it? It's bright enough. It's just hard to use, I reckon.
You reckon? Yeah. It comes with two ink cartridges, and spare batteries are included.
ink cartridges? What? You have to spend $100 to get your toner refill.
Yeah, or you know, the what do you call the ink insert?
How long does the battery last?
Well, I don't know. It's
you'll have to come back to me in a
I've
year's
had it
time.
On for at least a minute or so now.
A lot longer than you'll ever use it.
Where did you get it from, and how much?
It was given to me as a gift, but there's a review, and you can buy them and everything online. You have a look at Gizmodo.com in the gadget section, and I'll put a link up on the forum for you.
Fantastic.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.howtogeek.com.
What, we don't know already? What's there?
Well, it's a useful blog, and it's got an honourable goal of being the best source of how-to articles anywhere.
Really?
With content easy enough for beginners, but useful enough for geeks as well.
I'm getting off the Apple site. What was the URL again?
It's howtogeek, H-O-W-T-O-geek.
So what sort of how-to, like, is it how to pull apart your video recorder? Or?
All that sort of stuff, Mark. Anything, a how-to is what technical people call, it's a document where it explains step by step how to do something. It's how to install software or configure an application or troubleshoot something.
Yep.
So we in the technical world often look towards how-tos.
We're just typing in iPhone at the moment.
Okay, if we're needing assistance with something. Here's some examples on
how to crack and hack your iPhone.
Yeah, on the How-To Geek website. It's got undocumented features in Word 2007. How to set up hotkeys, how to stop your start menu from closing.
Yes, there is something there about how to hack the iPhone,
there you
just go. So you know.
How about this one? Why the tab key doesn't work for drop-down controls in Firefox on OS X?
Man, that's a ripper. Bookmark, add this page, done. All right.
There you go, a handy repository of technical how-tos. It's www.howtogeek.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Shoot.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A mystery woman who attracted thousands of admirers on Facebook has been exposed. She is nothing more than a pretty advertisement for a porn site.
Oh, you found that ex-girlfriend of yours.
Images of so-called mystery digital camera blonde were posted on the popular social networking site Facebook, supposedly in a bid to trace the owner of a camera lost on holiday. The Facebook plea read, "We're trying to track down the lovely lass in these photos so she can be reunited with her lost digital camera. Help us reunite this lass with her camera." The revealing pictures prompted tens of thousands of offers of help in the quest to return the lost property at the rate of one subscription every 5 seconds.
So she was she was no stranger to a camera, obviously.
She wasn't. The pictures included the mystery girl in a bikini and underwear and some naked. But the object of the Good Samaritan's fascination simply turned out to be Wendy, a model who poses for X-rated pictures online. Her porn site admitted, yes, it was all just a clever viral marketing campaign.
Oh, well, there you go, and it worked absolutely amazingly
worked
well.
Worked a treat for them. What you said earlier, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
No, exactly right. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Mark Diggins, and our guest this evening is Justin Dunlop. We've been talking all about Macintoshes and things like that. What you were just talking about then, and naughty pictures, Dr. Ron, there was a very interesting section about how Microsoft looks and discerns between images which should be and should not be displayed in image search. Did you know? There's some very interesting technology. They use skin tone recognition, facial recognition, and shape recognition. Ooh. Add all those three things together, and it determines what's returned as a search result.
And they reckon they've got a pretty good filter system in place.
They do. Okay. They do. But we can talk about that sometime shortly when we're joined by Hugh Williams from Microsoft in Search. Now, Alan Lazarus sent an email saying, coming in loud and clear on Ubuntu 7.04. There you go. How's your Ubuntu research going, gentlemen? Don't send me emails at this hour of the night because we've got to go. But do send emails, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're a version ahead of me, Alan. I'm running 6.06 at home, so I need to get onto that. I need to upgrade to 7.
All right. Join us at the same time, same place next week, wherever you are around Australia or around the world listening on the pod. Come and visit the website and contribute. We like hearing your emails. We'll read them out on air. And you can also ring the phone number too, 1300 664 882, and leave a voice message. Until next week, bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, and podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM, Highlands FM and Queer FM in Western Australia. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.